Thank you, Alec, and good morning. I will try and give you some ideas that you might think about when you consider where South Africa may be headed. The first is this: what's happening? And if at any point in the last 400 years, what are today the boundaries of the modern South Africa, had people there been able to choose who would govern over them, we'd never have ended up in a position where there was a political bloc that commanded a majority or was let alone able to, through whatever means, sort of force its views onto the rest of society. And the ANC's majorities after 1994 were simply an inherited legacy that were always set to decline and majority to be lost. As soon as this moment is reached, where a majority of voters have no living memory experience of the apartheid past. And we produce a lot of data on the country through the SRF that I am a part of, and that is what we see now, that if a South African does not remember the past in whatever constituency they represent, the ANC no longer has a majority. And where that's leading us, if we remain a free society, is probably this, that at some point in the next decade, Parliament will look as follows. The biggest party is going to have about a third of the vote, and that's going to be a party of aspirant middle-class people who are sitting on the urban peripheries and the urban fringe, trying to get into that middle class, about a third of the vote. And that might be a party that's commanded by whatever's going to grow out of the ANC of today, if that party doesn't make too many strategic mistakes in the aftermath of this election. The second biggest party is going to have about a quarter of the vote. And that's going to be a party of the established multi-generational middle class, a market that the DA of today largely commands, entirely diverse in its membership. About a third of DA voters in this election are going to be white, and a third will be black, and a third will be mixed race and Indian and the like. So we've got the urban fringe party that grows out of the ANC. It's got about a third of the vote, and we've got something that's the DA, or what comes from it, that has about a quarter. We're going to have a third block, and that's going to be the hard left fringe. They're going to have about 15% of the vote. You must have that if you are in the position that we are in, where 70% of young people do not have a job. And it's a remarkable statement on the country that in that environment, the hard left that I'll get to in a moment, so a bit more about, struggles to hold levels of support north of 10%. And it's a comment we're going to get to countervailing forces just now. Moderate, centrist, pragmatic public opinion. It's a center-right, Christian conservative society still. It's one of the most powerful countervailing forces in favor of the country's success. So we've got a 25 in the established middle class and a 35 on the fringe, and then we've got 50% of the populist left, and the balance of that is going to be all sorts of weirdness. Little ethno-nationalist language parties, the ones, twos, threes. And out of that, a future South African government will be built. And if the country is not to fracture later into sort of de facto federal, not perhaps de jure, but de facto sort of federal enclave future, if that's what you wish to happen, that it doesn't do that, then the best way to hold it together as a unitary state is to merge the established middle class bloc with the bloc on the periphery, and that becomes a stable future government. A way to think about the future. We'll talk about that later today. Alec might put some questions to that on me. So where are we if that's where we're going? Where have we come from first, and then where are we today? 94, the ANC's got 63% of the vote. And in 2004, it's got 70, so it's up. And that's up off the baseline of this remarkable moment of transition. And the reason for that is in the first decade on the scoreboard, ANC has done very well. It's doubled the number of people in employment. If you were a propagandist for the ANC, you could say that it, in 10 years, has added as many jobs to the economy as had been added in the previous century. And yet, its leaders through that era are confronted with the charge of jobless growth, still carried in the business press in South Africa today. The share of families that did not have electricity in their homes on the first evening of democracy is 49%. And that figure will drop to below 20% by the time Mbeki packs up his office after he's been chased out at Polokwane. Amongst other reasons, the B-grade analysis community will tell you, the failures of service delivery. 10 formal houses were built in that era for one shack that was erected in the country. And as debt levels were cut in half from 49 to about, I think, 48 to 27% of GDP in 13 years, the saving on the government's interest bill financed the rollout of the most expansive welfare program of any emerging market. So on the board, the ANC under Mbeki did well. It was also, of course, laying the seeds of its destruction with its affirmative action policies in the civil service, and corruption was endemic, and that fronted Suharto and others early on in foreign policy, something that continues today with Russia and Iran. And that's why ANC support lifted in that first decade. And at the time, as I did that, I was a member of a team of very good South Africa analysts at the Institute of Race Relations. And we saw that, and we said, liberation loyalty voting is a myth. It doesn't exist in South Africa. ANC voters vote on material circumstances, which is perfectly obvious, but you need to sometimes show it. And there's a flip side to that coin. If these guys screw up and they drop the growth rate, they will see a rapid deterioration in support. And we knew at the time that Eskom was going down, the lights would go out. We knew what the consequences of BE would be for investment and affirmative action for the caliber of people in the civil service. So we knew the tide was going to turn. And Mbeki, in some respects, is saved by Zuma. Had Zuma not dethroned him, his era would not have ended on a peak, but the inevitable consequences of the white anting that played out at the same time as these amazing successes would have exposed him, and he's saved from that. And as growth slips and living standards stagnate, we've added about 2 million jobs to the economy in the last 15 years. We added 7.5 million in the first 10 or 15 years. ANC support has ratcheted down. And it's untrue to say that the ANC governs with impunity and there are no consequences for failure. Because if you study the small micro data, every little step down in living standards translates into a step down in ANC support. And so pronounced is the collapse of ANC support that if only urban South Africans voted now, where those younger people are that don't remember the past, the ANC would get about 30%, 35%. In rural South Africa, double that, because it's populated by people to a greater extent who remember what it was like to be a black South African growing up in rural South Africa under white, often cruel, domination. That trend has accelerated. About 3 weeks ago, the collapse of ANC support. Ramaphosa takes it to 58% in 2019. The collapse now accelerates. In 3 weeks ago, the ANC hit the floor at about 40% of the vote. We had it there, Mark Data before us had it there, and the chaps at Ipsos had it in the same place. And we run a track, so we track every single day. All the provinces, we only publish three of them though, all the parties. And in the last several weeks, the ANC has been ratcheting up, last 3 weeks, 0.2, 0.3 points a day, half point. So they've come off their 40 to sit near a 45 now. This is a predictable pattern for anyone who studied South African elections. It's the famous squeeze. They're putting boots on the ground. They've got the state broadcaster again behind them. And they stigmatize the opposition. And they squeeze a few points back. And if we project the current little dots, the data points of ANC support, if that trend holds, which it might not, 2 weeks can be a very long time, then the ANC can hit a number of around 46, 47, 48 on a margin of error of 2. So maybe we're a bit off. Maybe they even climb back over the line and cling with their fingernails to 51. One more time, and when we talk, we'll talk about the implications of these kinds of results. This slide in ANC support is the first countervailing force in favor of the country's success. It means the political system's working as it was designed to work. It has not failed or collapsed, or 94 being a mistake, or where it's chaos and a shambles and so on. Emerging markets, post-colonial ones, when they move from the first post-colonial administration to the next, can do so peacefully, if shambolically or violently. And we're in the fortunate minority that are going to do it peacefully the first time around. And that mustn't be taken for granted. The second countervailing force is that a marker in the death of political organizations is when their supporters overtake the leadership in terms of the ideas the supporters will tolerate. If you ask ANC voters, if your leadership comes to you and says the country's changed and we need to change fundamentally, would you support or oppose these changes? 70% of ANC supporters would support joining a coalition government now. And that's remarkable because one of the great victories over apartheid was the idea that the liberation governments would govern on their own terms for forever. ANC voters will surrender that. Would you surrender minimum wage laws? That splits 50-50 inside the ANC ranks itself. It wouldn't be countenanced by the leadership, a function of the desperation caused by the vast unemployment rate. And two-thirds of ANC supporters would support the party if it dropped racial preferencing policies in the civil service. Because if you're poor in South Africa, so much of your life depends on the quality of the interaction you have with the civil service. And Labour was an enormous ideological victory over the colonial past, and so was the idea that the state would have preferencing policies to accelerate black South Africans into the middle classes, and that supporters of the ruling party would surrender that now is to show that a public opinion in South Africa is not an obstacle to future reform. The obstacles sit in the South African elites, in business and in related. So the political system works and there's an openness for reform and Eskom's coming right. We are strong. My colleague Gabriel is here. We did the work 18 months ago. We said on Alex's show, load shedding will be over by the first quarter. It is over. And it's not over because of the burning of diesel, but because the Reuters exit allowed the cabinet to develop the good sense to support the coal station managers in South Africa, and that's a large part of the reason why we're not in load shedding crisis. So that's better. May even hold. As long as the economy doesn't try to grow very fast, the lights are probably going to stay on. If you're in South Africa now, people can tell you it's been 44 days that the electricity's been on. The government is performing very well. We should vote for it. Relativism becomes important. If you're a Soviet housed former liberation activist, as so many ANC leaders were, you know that when defeat approaches, you print money to create inflation so you can create desperate poverty and populism to do an end run around democratic constructs. And yet, there's a bit of cheating, but in the main, the finance minister, with the support of the cabinet, is allowing the government expenditure line to track the revenue line sideways, meaning that there's an openness to a degree, even inside the ANC, instead of burning the house down, which printing would do, to accept defeat and try and negotiate something in the aftermath. And this means it's not a fascist autocratic administration in the main, and again, not to be taken for granted. On the 29th of May, three or four days after that, you will see one of three kinds of results. And this is how you should think about the election. The first results, the ANC is over 50%. That's still on the cards. It's a bit unusual, but it's there. And until Mr. Zuma appeared, they were, in fact, very near 50%. It's only him that's pulled them down. A second kind of result is the ANC very near 50%. So 45, 46, 47. In both of those two results, it will try to carry on exactly as it has to date and not change very much at all. And Alec will convene us in this room in 2029, and we'll pick up the conversation from this very point and say, well, what's going to happen now? The country's just in a holding pattern. If it's near 40, that's very different, because now I can't cobble together enough rats and mice to form a government. And here, a minority government becomes one option. I'm starting to become quite keen on that as a government of national unity, perhaps with the involvement of the DA, who are here to speak for themselves today, so they can talk on that. Or the radical deal with the EFF and MK is done. And the implications, therefore, of whether the number is nearer 46, 47, or nearer 42, 43, which is almost within the margin of error, going to be absolutely enormous for us. And Alec, I will join you here, and we can take this further.